Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow Andrew on the board. All kinds of stuff going on in the city this morning, causing us to be a little late with the red line shut down, going around a different route, buses moving people all over the place, all kinds of stuff going on. You know, in the city is a city day. What can I say? SP futures are up 6, NASDAQ futures down 6, so not much this morning, acting like a day before the half a day before a holiday. The only issue with that is tomorrow morning we do have the labor numbers, so that's sort of interesting. They would be Friday, but they're coming out tomorrow on a Thursday, half trading day tomorrow. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
Oh, okay this morning.
When you say okay this morning, it's kind of singles it out.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a rough week, and I think I kind of figured out what's going on with that. I've had at times excruciating soreness in my legs.
Really?
Yeah, which doesn't seem related to anything I've been dealing with the last couple of months. And so I sort of figured it out. I thought, well, no wonder, dummy, you're sitting in the recliner all day. You're so sedentary. You're not doing a damn thing. Your muscles are getting sore because you're parking them in the same place every day and you're not using them very much. So I got out and rode the exercise bike this morning.
I thought, well, was that 5 miles you ran yesterday out of the blue?
Yeah, that I haven't run 5 miles since I was in college.
Well, I used to run 4 to 5 regularly, and then I ran one 10-mile race once, and I go, you know, that's enough. I had no desire to go a half marathon. I had no desire to a marathon. 10 was enough.
Just well, my high school routine was 2.5 miles every day, 10 times around the track.
Well, there you go.
So I had pretty good stamina back in those days. Like I said, I'm down about my high school weight. It's just distributed a little differently now.
Well, the best exercise I ever did was...
I'm pretty sure that if I just start, you know, I don't really have to push it on the bike. I just have to keep it on a low resistance and just make sure I get some pedaling in every day, maybe even twice a day. I think that's going to help me a lot. And with that and some other things that I've been doing, I think I'll be pretty well on the mend.
Well, then there's the Nutrigenics Total T and all the other stuff you got to do. You can be like Frank Thomas.
Yeah, I can be just like Frank Thomas. And she'll like it too.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All of a sudden, you have people calling in saying, "What's that guy's phone number?" You know, you never know what's liable to happen, Kevin. You know, it's one of those things. Hey, you guys were at the risk of insulting/boring the listeners, which I don't really want to do. Everybody was going. Chortling, is that the term? Chuckling, cackling regarding the Bobby Bonilla Day yesterday. Why don't you explain what that is, and then I'll do the very boring economic analysis of it.
Yeah, well, Bobby Bonilla was a pretty good baseball player, a very good baseball player, from the really mostly 1990s, you would know him. His last contract he signed with the New York Mets, they asked him to defer money, basically. And he hasn't played baseball since, I think it was 2001, and yet he's been collecting an annual paycheck from the Mets of about a little over $1.5 million every July 1st.
Actually, it's $1.2 million.
$1.2 million, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's over $1 million. So every July 1st, he gets a paycheck from the Mets for a little over $1.2 million. And he's going to continue to do that, I think, through 2030.
2035.
So he's been cashing in on this little annuity for a long time. Now, you can do discounted present values of it and so on, and it's not so ungodly egregious, but still, for a guy to be still getting paid in 2025 with another 10 years of it, even though he hasn't played baseball since 2001, does get to be a little bit of cause for celebration, and people tend to get a kick out of it. And Bobby Bonilla wasn't a bad guy. He played for the White Sox for quite a while. It wasn't like he was a bad guy or anything. So, you know, nobody begrudges him. Nobody thinks, "Jay, I can't believe that jerk's still getting paid."
I would not say that at all if you were a New Yorker, by the way.
Why would you not say that at all if you were a New Yorker?
Because there I was one night, minding my own business.
As usual,
yeah,
yes.
And then the CBOE, as I was chairman of the marketing committee, flies me out to Yankee Stadium to, schmooze a bunch of the member firm people in what was a Yankee Stadium skybox. But they didn't have skyboxes. It was actually a box behind the grandstand. If anybody knows the grandstand used to be. And, you know, you could sort of see the field, but basically you had a bunch of TVs in there and, you know, expensive chow and booze and you schmooze people. And that was the night that I got my total disrespect for any part of government, if I didn't have it already, Kevin. When the guys were asking me about what happened in the OEX, this was a long-term capital situation. And on that expiration Friday, the market was basically down the rat hole. And at 10 o'clock in the morning, the Fed lowered the discount rate during the trading day, which caused an incredible turnaround in the market. And I was, I don't know why, I somewhat smelled a rat, because we were heading south. Market was going down, and I stood next to a put broker, and I was basically short out the ass because everybody wanted to buy puts, so I had to get them ahead of the people who wanted to buy them from me, right? But I just thought, you know, this is kind of weird. And I just turned around and bought all these calls just in case. A little out of the money calls, cheap. And I'm thinking, at least if it runs way up, you know, I'll basically save my ass. Market turns around like you would not have believed, races up, and I think this is back, you know, when I had a pretty big account. I think my puts lost somewhere in the neighborhood of like 550 grand, my put position. I mean, I traded the rest of the day and scalped pretty well, but the calls made like $5 more than the puts lost. It ran up so much that my Armageddon calls actually finished like 10 or 12 bucks that I paid like, you know, 20 cents for or something. And one of the guys asked me, they knew I was a index trader. The guy said, you know, somebody from the Fed called me, knew we were going to this meeting, wanted me to ask you how many people got hurt in the OEX. Because evidently, they did that on purpose to refinance some of the people that were getting their ass kicked with the long-term capital. Was it Russian debt? Was somehow combined? So long ago. It basically told those people to get long and then turn the market. And from that day on, I figured whoever is in office, somebody who's behind all this stuff, I mean, it can be crooked as all get out. And I said to the guy, well, you know, I have two or three friends that I'll never see again because they got carried out. Oh, really? Well, gee, that's too bad. Yeah, too bad. I didn't give a shit. Anyway, so Yankee Stadium we got there real early, so there's like very few people around. For those who don't, I was stunned. Right behind right field, low down, there was like 10-12 rows of almost like bleacher seats, Kevin, a small area there. That area is packed, and I'm thinking, what in God's name is going on there? Well, it turns out whoever the Yankees were playing, Bobby Mania was on the other team. And this is when he was gone from the Mets, wherever he went next. I don't think it was the White Sox, but he's playing right field. Wasn't he really a third baseman or something?
He was in Florida or something. He might have come up as a third baseman.
But he's playing right field, and as soon as he goes out there, Bobby sucks. Bobby sucks. This one on, Kevin, it's the eighth inning. I mean, if it's Chicago, even if you started out that way, after a couple of beers, you go, I'm tired of yelling Bobby. They did it the entire game. So my hat was off. One part of my hat was off to New Yorkers, and one sitting there going, these people are idiots. they did that the entire game to the guy. I mean, is that unreal? I'm in eighth inning. Bobby sucks. I'm going, aren't you people tired? they weren't. They must have been a bunch of Met fans.
So he must have done something to offend them. Maybe he left as a free agent or something like that.
He somehow got the reputation of being kind of a dog for the Mets. Even they were paying him a lot of money, and he didn't hustle to somebody's satisfaction.
They rehired him because he played for the Mets, and then this final contract, the Mets brought him back after he had been gone.
Well, anyway, the nuts and bolts on this deal, and it's really some kind of a deal, they owed him the last year of his contract. They owed him $5.9 million in 1999. So it was a big chunk.
But they didn't want that money tied up because they had this other great, great return on investment opportunity.
Okay, well, let me go through it here quick because I did a lot of work on this.
I'm just teeing it up.
Right, I know you are. $5.9 million in 1999. Now, the part of this that everybody forgets when he's still getting paid today, in lieu of that, he wasn't going to get anything until 2011. So the annuity of the 1.29 or 1.23, whatever, 1.23, I think, goes from 2011 to 2035. So for 11 years, he essentially forewent, I don't think that's a term, he didn't get his $5.9 million.
Yeah, he had to scrape by on the other millions he made in his career.
Whether he did or didn't. But just in terms of the numbers, so if you were to look at what kind of return, $5.9 you're not giving to him. Now, the money went to Bernie Madoff, okay, which I could go into that for. That's two shows, what I know about Bernie Madoff. We knew he was a big sleazebag long before any of this happened, but Bernie Madoff pretty much invented payment for order flow, Kevin. I've never told you that.
I think you've discussed it on the show.
Yeah, anyway, he's a sleazebag day one. So now you have to sit. You got to sit there and say, all right, now what am I trying to do here? Between 1999 and 2011, I need to make enough on this $5.9 million, to where it covers the annuity going forward of $1.2 million for essentially. 25 years, right? 24. 2035 minus 2011 is 24, right? Every time I try to do that. So I have to make enough to cover the future value or the present value of that annuity. I'm going to bet Bernie was promising him, I'll take the low end. I'm going to say he was promising him 20% return. If that was the case, the $5.9 million in 1999 by 2011 would be worth $52.3 million. Now, 20% a year for a guy who manages money is out there. I mean, it's really out there. I mean, anybody can do that. I mean, I'll give my money too. But I'm saying 52.3. And then if you were to continue to make that 20% to 1935, you only had to give the next guy $5.9 million. So you essentially would have made $47 million at a 20% return with this deal, even though everybody in the world would be saying, why is Bobby still getting paid? Now, if you drop it back down to 15%, the 5.9 becomes $30 million. Then you have to put up 7.8 for the annuity. So not as much, but you still make 20-some. I got the break even at roughly 9.6% on the deal.
Okay.
So it's not anywhere near as ridiculously egregious as the people chortling now, the guy's still getting paid.
That's what I said earlier, and I agree with you, is you could argue bad deal would be worse deal, but it wasn't so ridiculously out of line that this is some kind of an outrage or a but what it is it's a really nice income stream for Bobby Bonilla long after he stopped playing baseball.
Yeah, provided
24 years after he stopped playing baseball.
Provided he didn't croak in the 12-year period.
Well, yeah.
But I was two flies in the room.
Although you can put provisions for that, too. That doesn't help him when he's dead, but it will help his family.
So the two flies in the ointment are, can you really get 9.6% return for 36 years? And I'm going to say, I'll take the under on that. But now Bernie had a good song, right? As they say, as Roberta Flack once said. And you also didn't plan on putting your money with somebody and the money being gone. That really causes a problem, right? So because not only did they not get the 10%, which would have put them better than break even, I got you reasonably better at break even by a few hundred grand at 10%. Not only did you not get the 10%, the money's gone. Now, here's a question for you, Kevin. After three trades, and now the contract has gone to the third owner, right? Now, well, actually, it's back with the Mets because he finished his career with the Mets. If some of that money got recovered from Bernie Madoff, I thought, don't hold me to this, but I think something like 60% or something got recovered, didn't it? 50, 60, I mean, it was a significant amount. Who gets that dough? The family of the first guy or the person who owns the second or the current contract?
I would think whoever owned the investment.
Which would be the first person. That didn't go with the deal.
I don't think the team owned the investment.
Yeah, so I mean, if the first person, if the guy actually got $3 million back from the 5.9 he gave Bernie, and maybe he did get paid for a year or two. I don't know if he did or didn't. He's down a couple mil, but it's not the same as the current guy who's paying him every year, is it? I don't know how that would work. But no, you didn't think of that, did you? I just thought of it on the way in this morning. Wait a minute. What if there was any recovery of this money? I'll bet he didn't send it to the current owner of the Mets. Why would you? Are you there? Andrew, what happened to Kevin?
Looks like he's muted here. Looks like we lost him for just
a
second.
I muted the cough. Sorry, I forgot to unmute it.
Okay. So, I mean, I wonder if the original family got some of that money back. I don't think that would go with the current owners, do you?
Unless they bought the asset with the team, but I doubt that the quotes, I put that in quotes, asset, when they bought the team, but I doubt they did. So, yeah, it probably went to the old people.
Wow. Interesting world. I mean, when you see stuff like this and you see these kinds of returns and people are going to make them, real quick story, Kevin, and I think both of these guys ended up, both of these firms paid and the guys were innocent. Mike, way back in the day, God, how many governors ago, I worked for Nancy Drew Sheehan, who was a friend of a friend of a friend, who was running for treasurer for Illinois. And so they scooped me into this little group. A lot of fun. Met some good people, and we'd have a big meeting, and then we'd head out and have burgers and beer. So it was a nice evening, Kevin. Well, the job dropped to me. They actually, imagine this, about, I guess you could say people still do stuff on their websites and so forth, but the idea was for us to put together a real serious pamphlet about how Nancy was going to run the treasurer's thing in Illinois. I'd say, hey, Tom, how about you writing the finance piece? And I go, all right. So, of course, I dig in, and it turns out, Kevin, you minimize all a treasurer can do in just about every state and every municipality. Is invest in U.S. government securities, right? So if I'm the treasurer of Illinois and you're the treasurer of Michigan or Indiana, you and I could have a bet every year of a fine adult beverage as to who would do better. But really, if I beat your ass, it was because I was lucky enough, smart enough, to pick mostly 6 months maturities and you picked a year or something. So I made 4.11 and you made 4.09 or some crap. You know, there really wasn't much management in there, right? Other than picking the, you know, 3 months versus 6 months versus a year stuff. So I'm looking through this huge list of people all over the country, and two of them pop out, like if you got a, you know, another head on your shoulder, Orange County, Texas, and who are the idiots in California? Help me here. What was the county there? Was it Orange? No, it was Orange County, California.
What's the one county in California? What?
In Harris County, Texas. It was Orange County, California, and Harris County, Texas.
Okay.
And these guys are making like 9% when everybody else is making 4%. And I go, whoa, wait. What are these two idiots doing? There's no way they're doing anything remotely regarding Treasury securities, right? And those were the guys. Remember, they lost all the dough, the guy in Orange County? And the guy who was in charge of managing the money for the county, he was gave the Schultz, I know nothing, I have no idea what they were doing, I thought everything was secure, blah, blah, blah. Anytime, Kevin, you see people doing the same thing you're doing, making 7%, and all of a sudden somebody's making 20, you're going to sit there and go, I think his boundaries are a little different than mine, shall we say.
But if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, and those guys, they both ended up not going, you know, not really forfeiting any money or anything, and both those counties got hurt pretty bad. And I think, didn't Merrill Lynch ended up having to pay up for Orange County because they didn't explain the risks to the guy and everything? What man or moron is sitting there going, I'm making 10%, everybody else is making 4%, and there's no risk? How do you get that job if that's your mentality? Just saying.
Hey, let's put a bow on the Bobby Bonilla story. Yeah. And that is, the Orioles are also paying him $500,000 a year, and that's going to last until 2028.
Why?
Pardon?
They do the same thing?
They had a lot of deferred payment, but I don't have the details on the contract.
You know, the only contract I can see remotely
let's see if I can pull something up here real quickly.
Isn't Ohtani's like this, where he's not taking money for a long period of time?
Ohtani's, yeah, he took a whole lot of deferred payment.
Well, the guys that are, this is not a shot at anybody, although it may sound like it. Explain to me an athlete who's 32 years old, Kevin, which is pretty young still. You're partying, if you're not married, you're chasing whatever, that agrees to not get paid for 12 years. I mean, how rare is that?
I mean, well, I guess you're going to say. Actually, Ohtani is not too far off of that, in that he's actually getting paid a very minimal amount. Now, I am sure away from baseball, he's making a whole lot of money too. Which I would doubt that was ever on Bobby Bonilla's profile. I don't think it was a big endorsement magnet or anything like that. Here I did find the Orioles deferred payments ran from 2004 to 2028.
Okay.
So he set himself up for a very comfortable life.
Well, the thing that kind of...
He's 62 now, so, you know, he's got a little ways to go on all of this stuff, so he's going to have the cash flow coming in for a long time, and if he's been smart with the money and has stashed a lot, you know, stashed enough away, he's going to live his whole life in a very comfortable way.
How pissed off are you at Major League Baseball about Dave Parker... going to the Hall of Fame a month after he died? I'm pretty pissed.
Well, I will say this, at least he got to take the phone call.
Yeah, unlike our buddy Ron Santo.
Yeah, so that, you know, so I think that's good. I'm you were talking about this yesterday, and I was thinking about that back to, back to those days. And I do remember that, you know, towards the end of his career, there was a lot of cocaine scandal in Major League Baseball, and a lot of it really was focused in on the Pirates. Yogi Berra's son, Dale Berra, yeah, was one of the people involved in there. And of course, we all know the Doc Ellis story, pitching a no-hitter in the aftermath of an acid trip. He wasn't scheduled to pitch that day, so a lot of that may have been held against him, much like the most obvious steroid users have not been able to crack the Hall of Fame too. So I just don't remember specifically, but Dave Parker was an utterly outstanding player. So so you had to deal with that.
What do you make of
Did you watch the Cubs last night?
Till about the eighth inning, and then I don't know, somehow yeah. I snoozed.
Yeah, they had a real nice 3-run inning. I think it was in the second.
I saw.
Yeah. Did you see what was unusual about that? Do you remember?
No, I was kind of talking to some people, but it was.
All three outs were on the bases.
Oh, really?
Yes. So
I saw the one guy you nailed at the plate.
Yeah, that was Carson Kelly, the catcher, and there was a wild pitch, and it bounced right back off the wall to the catcher, who threw to the pitcher and tagged him out.
Have you ever seen a pitcher put on a tag at home plate?
He's got on base and got picked off.
Have you ever seen a pitcher? I know I used to go cover home when I was in Little League and stuff. I've never seen a pitcher actually make a play there until last night.
Oh, I've seen it before, yeah.
Well, I mean, I just never have. I mean, I might have maybe once or twice, but it's really rare. They really don't want the play, especially when you can run into the guy. You can't anymore.
Yeah, it is. But at least now they've changed the rules enough that it's not quite as dangerous. Now it's two guys on the move, so that's a little bit hard to hard to avoid sometimes. But the catcher gave him a pretty good throw.
But it's really an awkward tag because the runner's behind you. It's a real awkward tag.
Yeah, it is. But, like most tags, the thing you should do is just be tagging, right in front of the base. Where's the foot got to go?
Yeah.
The foot or the hand if he's sliding. Where's it have to go? That was, they always talked about Javier Baez and his snap tags. But what was really, never discussed is he just went for the spot, which is brilliant.
Yep.
Because how many times do you see a guy get tagged, way up on the body when if you just go, put the tag down where he has to go?
Any other tag at the plate, the ball's coming at you, you have some kind of sense, because you can out of your, whatever you want to call it, your vision to decide, you have some kind of sense, A, if the runner's coming at all, or if he's, where the hell is he, basically. Now, where you have to go for the ball could screw your vision up a little bit. But if you're getting a throw from the catcher behind the plate, you have no idea where the guy is. And maybe you can hear him, but you're sure you don't even really know he's going.
You might catch him out of peripheral vision, but, you don't know exactly how close he is or anything like that. So, it's not an easy play. It was just really weird. I don't think I've ever seen all three outs on the bases before.
You know what's amazing with the, I guess you get it in politics and whatever you write now, is if you kick up, and I pay attention to these guys more than I should, but I kick up the Cubs on my phone or on my desktop, which I'm sitting in front of 12 hours a day, there's always like a few articles from like the Bleacher Bums or somebody, some, I won't say an idiot because they watch the game, but. It's weird, Kevin, is, I never picked up this habit. I've written quite a bit. I used to write a column, and you obviously did too. If you decide that, the Cubs' third baseman sucks, it's one thing to say, here's why I think they could use a new third baseman, blah, blah, blah. Of course, you just can't come out and find one off the grocery market shelf. All these guys are into this. It's obvious that most Cub fans now realize, first of all, did you talk to most Cub fans? Did you talk to any, or is it just yourself? Most fans now agree. And you know what? It's almost...
Tom, experts say.
Yeah, experts say. Or if you're on CNBC, there's the one guy in the afternoon who's like, I absolutely can't stand the guy. the judge, where the hell he is. He's Judge Wapner's kid, I think. I mean, it's not like I don't like him personally or anything. There's if you're going to give an opinion, give it. And state the reasons why that you give it. And if somebody else has better reasons and disagrees with you, guess what? You might actually learn something, right? is possible.
And it's a good conversation.
Yeah. It's like, it's never, I think the market's too high, I think the market's too low, I think the stock's gone. A lot of analysts have told me, who are they? Point, it's almost like Mayor Daley, who are these alligators, right?
Yeah, cite your sources always.
And that's no fun, Kevin. That's no fun. You can't be doing that. Most analysts agree. Who the hell ran? Plus, I say this once in a while, I'll be brief. When I started the business, there actually were a boatload of analysts. I mean, every firm had people that covered stocks, and that was their job. I mean, that's how people pay nothing for commissions, or think you don't. The guy on the other side is getting paid. People are selling your stuff. So anyway, I won't go into that. But if you went to Hornblower Weeks, or you went to Merrill Lynch or somebody, they might have a guy who covers IBM or GM or someplace. And there's places that are known as the best analysts. Now, whether they had a brother-in-law work for the place or whatever, by and large, you essentially, if you your broker would say, our guys really think that IBM, our best analyst, thinks that J.P. Morgan, thinks that McDonald's, thinks that IBM is a buy here. Or we think, Kevin, your stock, you've had this investment in IBM forever, we think it's a little pricey here, maybe you should like... They would have a research department that they essentially called upon. And there were, this was a real job for you know, 30 of the biggest firms, 25 at least. And these guys would absolutely, you know, bust their fanny to get every piece of information they could on every one of these stocks and be better than the next guy. Well, now when they say expected profits, expected from who? There's a few people that still come out with predictions, but nobody's in tight with these firms like they were before, way because legally it's harder for the firms to do that, and firms don't give out basically any information, or very little. So you're not going to, you might be able to, like with Apple, you could go to a, who's the outfit that makes the screens for them and stuff? Is the plant here or whatever the hell's their name? You know what I'm talking about. The guys are going to put the thing up in Kenosha.
Foxconn.
You mean you could, I suppose, go to Foxconn, and if you had any sources there, you'd find out that the shipments to Apple the last month were down 10% or up 10%. You can still do research. You can snoop and you can do your job.
Do CFOs still do calls with the analysts?
You have to do it to everybody. You can't do a thing on the road where you invite five of your best guys and have dinner and talk to them.
It's like an open call.
An open call.
And they'll tease what the earnings are going to be without saying it out loud.
So, I mean, it's... And then, you know, these are expectations. You know, who are these expectators? But, you know, you just have to be careful when we do all that. That's why you'll see sometimes earnings will come out and a stock will jump, you know, 8% or go down 8%, and the CEO comes out with some other story and it turns around, turns, it goes back up 8%. You know, the earnings have been, because we do a lot of earnings trades in the last couple of years. I think, Kevin, we're still up on average, but not like we used to. I mean, there was, like, we did the one in Nike. Nike was, I think we did the 64 line. Stack opens up, it's down to like 62, 61, and I'm going, again, we blew this to the downside. I don't know what the chairman says, now it's 74. It's, you know, it's double the straddle. So I don't, you know, the amount of information that's coming out before is like non-existent. I'm going to say that, you know, and don't trade like this, but for my years and years in the business, the straddles, if you just... The straddle is the call and the put of the strike, and it's your indicator of how much the market thinks that the stock is going to move. It should be like a break even. And usually, for a long period of time, I think if you would have sold the straddle every single time, you've probably been a winner, because most retail people, and none of my people, are ever going to sell that straddle naked. The only people are going to do that are professionals. So I would think that the straddle would be a little more expensive maybe than it ought to be, just because of the way the market's set up. And over a period of 10 years, if you were a straddle seller, even though you've had a couple, you'd have some many bad days, you'd probably be a winner. Well, I'm going to say in the last couple of years, I think being long them, which never happens. I mean, I've seen straddles, you know, being $12 in the last 6 months, where a stock has moved like 40, you know, 2 and 3, 10, 4 times straddle. I've never seen that before. I won't say never, but very rarely. Now it happens like every earnings week, a bunch of times. I mean, I don't know if it's the lack of information, whether people are just surprised, and whether the aftermarket markets are just horrible and there's nobody there to trade the stuff. Something's crazy. And I don't, you know, we still do them, and I think we're up on the year on them a little bit, but nothing like I would like to be. The only good news is, if you if you actually get a winner, the winner excuse me, the winners are actually bigger. So, you know, if you had a winner, it used to be if you had one winner and two losers, you know, you were over break even. But now, if you get one winner and three losers, you might still break even though nobody likes three losers out of four, right? Nobody likes to lose anything. I don't ever like a losing trade, for God's sake. I don't care how big the winner is, but the losers are like, wait a minute, I don't pick losers, do I? But the fact is, if you're in the game, you pick losers. And the trick is, if you have a loser, if you can nurse that back to break even, that's essentially the skill set. Because what did the guy from Blair Hall who was on last week say? If you can be right 52% of the time, you're doing good on your initial trade. It's the skill set after that. He goes, the idea okay. that people are right 70% of the time, he goes, I want to see who that guy is. Unless you're getting stuff from government, right? Well, then you can be right all most of the time. Where we're getting the Fed stuff. Hey, what do you make?
Yeah, as long as you don't get locked in a cage with a gorilla.
Yeah. What do you make of this ongoing, and where do you think this is going on a political, this ongoing fight between Trump and Powell? And it looks to me, Powell's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do.
We talked about that last time I was on. I think Trump just wants, he wants rate cuts. He wants, you know, rates are, you know, some of his rates are down some anyway. But they got to roll a lot of debt. He wants the number as low as he can, so he's trying to jawbone as much as he can to get it. That's my simplistic view of it. I don't think it's anything more than that.
Well, I really do hope, and I, you know, you never know what's in anybody's mind and what he picked up at Wharton. I really do hope that he doesn't think that the Fed could just do that without repercussions that he doesn't want to see.
It seems to me, and this would be, if you look at all of the economic policy, everything is about the next, you know, or let's just say the first 18 months of his term. Everything that they're doing, and they believe that they're just going to be able to spur a lot of economic growth, and that'll make it easier to deal with the repercussions. Now, you know, you can argue that that's not true. I'm fine with that, but that's what it looks like to me. Is they're just saying let's get this, you know, let's get the agenda items up. Now they also have 12 separate appropriations bills in Congress right now because they don't want to do an omnibus. They want to deal with everything one at a time. So that's coming too. And I really think it's all about just getting everything done so that the economy is feeling pretty good come the election cycle, and then they'll see what they can do after that.
What do you make of and whether, you know, the politics of it, which side is what side is which, I actually don't give a crap about. What do you think of this deal they made with this lady from Alaska on this bill? How is that even legal?
Yeah, what did they give her? I know they made a deal with Murkowski, but what did they give her? What was it?
You know what they did? The cuts in food stamps that's in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska is going to be pulled out of that. They're going to get the same amount as before. How is that even legal?
Probably isn't, but.
But how do you do that?
They'll get challenged in court and by the
bill. No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
You don't think so? Challenge everything he does in court.
Well, I mean, he didn't do that. But how do you have a federal law that where one state's pulled out?
You don't think any of the stuff in this bill, if it finally passes, is going to get challenged in court?
Well, I think some of it...
standard M.O.
But it's not just a standard M.O. Some of it ought to be.
Well, yeah.
I mean...
It's just a way to slow things down in many cases.
Well, maybe the things need to be slowed down a hair, but I'm saying I don't know how you can even do that. I mean, I would never... Let's put it this way, Kevin. That's why I didn't make the money Bernie Madoff did. I can't even imagine stuff like this. Wait a minute. We're going to cut everybody's food stamp allotments except for her state because we need her vote. What are the rest of the senators going... What do you think the call's going into their place going? What about us? I mean, you know what? Out of all the things in the last month, I couldn't have imagined. I could never imagine that happening.
Well, my understanding of that and Medicaid and some of the other cuts was it wasn't so much that they were cutting the programs themselves is they were cutting who was eligible for it. And the one thing I'm pretty sure of is that Alaska's not the haven. A lot of this was aimed at people in the country illegally. And I'm pretty sure that Alaska has not become the haven for people coming over the southern border. So, it may very well be that it's of little or no consequence other than to articulate it. Now, there are also some work requirements in there for Medicaid, and I know you're talking about SNAP, but there are work requirements for Medicaid that say you have to be able-bodied, you have to be doing something. They'll even take volunteer work in exchange, but they don't want those people that you always talk about every month who are sitting on the couch doing nothing. They don't want them to be medical Medicaid eligible unless they're looking for work.
So so who's supposed to hire them?
Well, I suppose if you start cleaning out the number of people who are working off book or illegally, that's probably where you hope to get those cases, those openings. Plus, we have job openings. We already have job openings.
I don't think a lot of these people are employed. I mean, one of the parts here is
there's a lot of jobs people are taking because they won't take because they don't like them. It's not desirable work. Now, I think of back when my brother was a caseworker for the welfare department, and he always used to tell people, you know, first of all, when you start looking at the equation, if you're eligible for unemployment benefits or other or welfare benefits or anything like that, then if you lose them the minute you go back to work, then say you're taking a minimum wage or a low wage job, you net out what you're not getting, and you find out you're working for below minimum wage. So, I get that, but he used to tell them, you're never going to get on a good wage track unless you are working, because the easiest way to get the next better job is to have a job. And, that makes you more employable, and it makes a huge difference. So I think that's the part that's kind of lost, that when we look at that BLS report every month and we say, well, how many people are sitting on the couch doing nothing? There's not a lot of motivation for them to take the next job. But if you can take a longer view of it, a longer view of your earning life, you'll see that the best thing that you can do for yourself is get a friggin' job, so that you now can start looking for better jobs and having a track record to back up your application.
Well, there's a couple things in here that I think really, to be honest, bug the crap out of me. But one of them, you have to. Both parents have to have a Social Security number on the return. Well, there's an awful lot of people in this country that don't even know who the father is. That means they can't qualify?
Yeah. Tom, I never read that, so I'll have to see if it's what I think of it.
Well, plus we're talking about tax credit for kids. Well, there's... Now, a tax credit, now, the people on CNBC, a lot of them are always ragging regarding people that aren't paying income taxes, right? Of course, they don't realize it.
Yeah, what they really mean is federal income taxes.
Yeah, they really mean is federal income taxes. They're given a child tax credit. It bumps. And why does all this stuff come back down again after 2028? But a lot of it does. But 17 million kids, they're not going to benefit from that because... The parents don't pay federal income taxes. Would you just out of the blue, would you think that in order to get rid of a lot of this stuff, do you think that something like Tricky Dick's negative income tax should be looked at again?
I don't know. It's always been an interesting concept, and it really is just a matter of is it something that we could reasonably implement? My skepticism is in the reasonably implement part of it, because I pretty much believe that government's just going to bleep things up.
Well, they do some stuff they do okay.
Such as?
Well, I think they do okay with the arm.
I sent you something. I don't know if I sent it last night or this morning about the frauds. Let me pull it up here. The HHS. Actually, they have 324 defendants and have got charged yesterday over a $14.6 billion fraud in Medicare and Medicaid scams. And so the Justice Department has filed charges. They intercepted a lot of people leaving the country and so on. One of the reasons that government has not been effective is because they don't use good tools to find some of these kinds of things. And this was one of the good things that really came out of the Musk team, is using data analytics techniques, data tracking, automated stuff, where they could go find, they could go trace money trails a lot and start finding these things. And that's where HHS came into this, is they just started using automated techniques. Because in the past, it's almost as if we said, yeah, these kinds of tools exist, but we don't really want to know, so we're not going to use them. But as soon as you start saying, well, if I really want to know, I can start finding a lot of this crap. And that is, I hate hearing waste, fraud, and abuse, because it's like those three things roll out there. I don't give a shit about anything except the fraud. And it's like it's also built into the process, so that when I start saying does government do anything well, hey, they may be wasteful, they may make a lot of bad decisions at the department level on how money gets spent, but it's really this ongoing scam that we have, where people work through government, and whether it's through NGOs getting stood up just to accept money from a program, or whether it's individual fraudsters and fraud, outside, third party fraud, doing a lot of filings and so on, stealing a lot of identities to do the filings. It's there to be learned. And when I say does government do anything well, it's so susceptible to that, and that's part of why government is so damn expensive.
I think that for some reason, and it starts at the top, and we've had a bunch of crooked presidents in a row, I think. Starts at the top, and it wanders its way through Congress. There's always going to be a little something, like wet your beak. But you talk to Bill Moriarty, and he says the people that are in the highway departments, the people that are in the workers that are in the sewer and water departments, he goes, those are dedicated, educated people, and there's no fraud there. Now, there might be on who gets the contract for the Ryan, but I don't know if that means that the person who's doing the designing of it is a crook. And I think there's a lot of people. I mean, I think some of the people that I met in Indiana that were state senators, and I never, in Illinois, you never meet anybody like that, but looked to me like they had a regular old house and a regular old car, and they didn't have a whole bunch of dough, and they were pretty concerned about doing the job right for Indiana. I think there's a lot of really good people in government. I don't know whether they ever make it to the top is another issue. Probably I would agree with you there. But I don't think that every single one, if you start talking about, somebody in a huge district somewhere that they're pouring a bunch of money in to get because they need the number. I don't know what the percentage is in the House, Kevin. I have the suspicion that the longer you stay, the more you get bought by these companies, which makes you a little more and more crooked. But I mean,
yeah, a little compromised, and a little more compromised, and so on.
But it comes down to, the basics of it is, let's be real quick here because we got Russell, but
yeah, Russell's on.
I remember Father Fitzgerald, and he was a guy at he taught a class on unions and whatever, all kinds of other stuff. Patent attorney. That's why I'm not big on patent laws, because of Father Fitzgerald. But here was a guy that was, there was no gray in the man. Absolutely no gray in the man. Everything was black and white. And he would talk one day. Somebody says, well, when you're, he was a pretty serious arbitrator, and who are the other guys? The mediator. You know, in real big cases, big union cases and stuff. And he would say, you know, I have a, if I go out on the road, I make all my airplane reservations. Or if I drive, I drive. I always stay in some motel they would never suspect me to be in. You know, the no-tell motel. I'd go to some place for a burger at dinner. And if a beer showed up next to me and said compliments to somebody and somebody, I would head over to the phone. This is before cell phones. And I would call and I would say I was compromised. I can't do it. But you know what? And I used to think, you know, sort of everybody should be like that. And now you wonder, okay, he was generally, he was a priest. He was a teacher. To quote, what's his name? The boxer, the kind of dopey boxer that just fought. You know, I have three hats and a cot. I can do that. But what if it's you or me? And that's our living. And they're going to pay me, you know, 30 grand for this mediation. And I got kids to feed and a mortgage to pay. Do I really say I'm out of here because of one beer? Probably not. You know, and then what's the next thing? What if I find out my hotel
room is paid? Another way to look at it, because I have many of them I wrote myself, some of them I found elsewhere, but I have a collection of ethics challenges that I use in management class, certainly in business ethics class. And, you know, it's real easy to lay out the here's what happened, what would you do, what should you do? And then, you know, but I always ask the complicator questions. Well, yeah, except that you live a little bit better than paycheck to paycheck, but not much better. So if you challenge this, it's going to risk your job, and you have two kids at home to feed, and your spouse only works part-time. So, you know, how long can you afford to be out of work? How does that affect your thinking on this case? You know, are you as bold and as staunchly ethical as you'd like to be? So, yeah, there are a lot of things that challenge ethics just in routine life, even if you're not really inclined to be that way. So now, if you are inclined to just say, I'm going to get over wherever I can, there are more than enough opportunities to do so. And there's enough of that, and that's my skepticism with government, why I say just get the fraud out of it. Forget the refs, just get the fraud out of it, and I'll be happy.
But the fraud is so entrenched. I mean, I right now, Kevin, I don't believe in Russell. Feel free. I have my brother's family, which I'm very close to. I have extended family. I would not recommend that anybody with a family right now run for office or be a judge. If you don't think that part of this guy in North Carolina, wherever he is, his senator is not running again, in the back of his mind, what happened in Minnesota isn't there. You know, I got a bridge for you. This is getting so partisan and it's getting so personal. Everybody has to believe now that they have to worry about their daughter going off to school if they vote the wrong way. Maybe on either side. This is wrong, and it's getting worse. And you know, and we have people that aren't afraid to threaten people. I'm not so sure if I had five kids right now, you couldn't get me to run for office. I'd resign my judgeship tomorrow, go back to being an attorney. Well, no part of it. Now, if it's just me, have at it. You know, I'm a stubborn Irish guy. But you're not putting anybody I care about in danger, and they are. And that's how far I think it's gone. I mean, you may think it's not there yet, but I don't think you disagree with the trend is there.
Yeah, I think we... You know, we of course have the crazies, and you know, and a lot of that, you know, that starts at the top. You know, if you always talk about, you know, Trump and insults, but you know, it's equally from the other side. If not worse, because you have situations like, you know, Senator Schiff goes on Jimmy Kimmel and he says Trump can go F himself, you know, and has to be bleeped on there, but it's clear what he said. Or you get, Representative Dexter from Oregon, she's at a rally, and she just starts with the F Trump chat. those kinds of things. When you demonize, and how many times have we seen the Nazi references? And the thing is, so that's what we're getting out of leadership, is we're getting this demonization, you know, threat to democracy. Remember threat to democracy? We get all of these kinds of things, and when you're talking about somebody being a threat to democracy, you're giving that lunatic fringe almost a permission to say, well, I can save democracy. Watch.
Yeah, well.
And so even if you believe the shooter in Pennsylvania that hit Trump in the ear, if you believe he was a lone wolf, you know, he's kind of given permission to take that shot. I don't believe he was a lone wolf, by the way, but that's another issue.
It's hard to figure out whether where he was or he wasn't. The hardest thing is the lone wolf, but to go after. But it seems like I don't believe a lot of that either. I mean, whether people are lone wolf or
yeah. So everybody talks about how we have to tone it back, and nobody does.
Well, I mean, the first person right now to tone it back would be Trump. He every day insults somebody. I mean, that's just not my style. But anyway, hey Kevin, next time, well, we're not on Friday. Let's talk a little bit about this thing from the this $21 million settlement at NCAA. Do you know all the details on that?
No, other than that still doesn't preclude any of the private deals or anything like that.
But how does
it is showing up to be a problem with some people. You're getting some late transfers because they're not happy with the piece of the pie they're getting.
Well, is it totally ignore Title IX, or is it somehow dovetail in there, or what?
Well, I think there will be some Title IX suits about how that works. That is why you're seeing some of the athletic departments starting to become LLCs.
You think, how far do you think, maybe it's more of a Russell question, how far away do you think they are before they're taxable entities? They got to be getting real close.
Well, you're making an LLC, aren't you a taxable entity?
Not if it's, well, that's my question, not if it's allegedly still part of this.
That would have to have a different organization, a 501c12345, whatever number.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. If the Catholic Church owned an LLC to do their Catholic charities, I don't know if that necessarily makes it taxable. I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. I don't know. Maybe Russell will.
Bad call asking me.
What are you doing for the 4th? Anything decent?
Well, we always have a great fireworks show here. I'm not entertaining this year because, one, I'm behind on all getting, you know, my outdoors the way I like it. But aside from that, I don't know that I'm going to have the energy for it. My next-door neighbors did invite me over. They're going to have people over, so I'll probably go over there and eat. But we have a great fireworks show here.
Really? Good for you.
We have a homeowners association that really serves three purposes. So not one of those purposes is to harass the homeowners. So we do weeding for the lake, because that has to be very, very strategically done so that you don't kill your lake. You know, nobody wants a dead lake. But you do have some kind of kinds of invasive species that you want to at least control. The second thing we do is the fireworks show, and we actually have people who live here who got themselves licensed to do the show. So we don't pay anybody a markup to do the show, and we get the more of the wholesale type of pricing for the fireworks. So we have a really great show for such a small little association. And then we do a picnic every year. That's it.
Well, if you see one that doesn't go off and is heading toward your head, duck.
I will. They usually glob off straight out from where my house is, though. So I have a great view. All I have to do is pull up a chair.
Oh, good. All right, we have Russell.
I'm here.
What's up, bud? Are you you doing fireworks? Are you a fireworks?
No, I'm alone this week.
Where are
you can tell I'm alone when you walk into the kitchen, because there's a bunch of empty Diet Coke cans and fast food containers and a box of cookies. That's what you just. I looked at. I was like, man, I got to order a salad or something because I'm not taking care of myself with all the women out of the.
Where did they ditch you to? Where'd they go?
Well, my daughter's in a national dance competition. She actually the younger one who's too shy to talk to you too much. She won a judges award for a dance that she put together on her own, and then she's actually dancing at this very moment. Down in Tennessee, like she was scheduled for a little after 7 o'clock our time, and this is like her last competition before she goes off to college.
So they hopped in the family,
so they're gone for 9 days, and the other one's in Washington D.C. and refuses to ever come home again.
Why is that?
Well, oh, she loves it there. You've met her.
I have. Oh yeah.
She never wants to. It's kind of like me. I moved to Chicago from Memphis, and I'm never coming home again. And I held to that one because here I am.
Except I've been to Washington in the summertime. God, it's brutal.
She it's funny because she really she dresses pretty formally for somebody in there, somebody who's 20 years old, and continues to do it when she goes to work every day, and she seems to be dealing with the heat quite well. I warned her about that one because, you know, D.C. is all humid and Memphis was all humid like that as well. So I was kind of used to it. But she's living the dream there. She's interning for Comcast, and which means she interacts with NBC, CNBC, the local NBC station there, and MSNBC as well.
Wow.
And does some of the bookings, et cetera. But you were asking, what am I doing for the 4th? I live within eyeshot of Hinsdale Golf Club, so I will be sitting on my back porch watching the Hinsdale Golf Club fireworks.
They actually have a I don't know if I might be going to Indiana or not. I'm not sure, but if I don't, my cousin who's pushing 91 just got the Lifetime Achievement Award for Westmont. He's been working in the chamber there for God knows 50 years.
Oh, really?
And
you know, I can walk into my daughter's dance studio is in Westmont.
Well, evidently Thursday.
It's the next burb over.
Well, Thursday they're having a huge old car show and fireworks thing or something.
Oh, they have it. Are you coming out here for that?
The thought has crossed my mind.
Let me know, because I'm less than a mile from it, and I'm sure everybody listening to us like right now is, come on guys, get on with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, let me know if you're because her dance studio is on that street, and when she before she was driving and she danced on Thursdays, I'd go down there and wander around the car show, and then, you know, bring her home from dance.
I went to one of those,
let me know if you're going to be over there tomorrow night.
Well, I went to one of those on Route 66, and. Guy's got my favorite Corvette is the one that's like the 59 with the not the individual lights, but the ones that are in the bumper in the back. And anyway, so there's one sitting there, and I'm looking at it, and it's, of course, it says don't touch or anything like that. This is back when I was thinner, also probably was a hair taller. And the guy goes, "You like that car?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, why don't you get in it?" I said, "Well, because it says don't touch."
I'm following the rules.
So the guy goes, "No, I'm the owner. Get in it. You may still like to look at it, but you're not going to like it." And I go, "Why?" He goes, "Just get in. Pull the seat all the way back and get in." I get in, and I'm looking, and I'm 6'4", so it's not like I'm 6'10" or anything. Mm-hmm. I'm looking over the windshield, and my feet. I don't know how. I couldn't. The only way I could press the clutch is if the door was open with my left leg. And he goes, "You can't drive this thing. You just look at it, but don't ever think you want one because you don't." I go, "Okay, then."
It's not comfortable. The professor that I teach with at IU that lives out here in the Western Burbs, who is going to come on with us next week because their dissertation incorporates inaccuracies in the CPI and how it relates to the carry trade, and it'll be the day after the CPI report.
Well, so, I would never put those two together, the carry trade.
I know, but that's what you got to do when you got to do it. I mean, I did how often a stock's name appears in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, or Financial Times, and how, you know, does it hold up better during times of financial crisis, because people run to what they're familiar with without really taking the financials into account. And the answer was yes. So there's a stretch for you right there.
Private sector.
So, yeah, that's what you do with a dissertation. You find a couple of things that haven't been incorporated together and try to sound very smart about them.
According to ADP, private sector lost 33,000 jobs in June, badly missing expectations of 100,000 increase.
You know, I don't want to sound alarmist or anything, but you know, it just feels like any sort of discretionary stuff, like restaurants. You know, I saw some really nasty car sales numbers out of Europe.
Yeah,
it just seems like anything that's kind of discretionary is not doing particularly well this summer. I don't really know about the travel stuff because we're not traveling, but it just feels like things are slowing. I don't know. I think they're dramatically slowing. When we actually do go out to eat or something, we were out on a Saturday night a couple of weeks ago, and at a place that we would normally have to make a reservation to make sure we could get in, and it was half empty. And Mary Beth's like, "Well, it's summer; people are on vacation, etc." I don't think that's it, man. I think people are, you know. It's like we've talked about. It's just getting tougher. Your things are costing more and going up in expense quicker than our incomes. And you know, everybody's having to make life choices.
Well, and I think you have to be. You don't have to be, but if you want to be rigorous mm-hmm. about stuff, you have to be careful on what you look at. Like if you walk into for instance, there's a German restaurant out by Audrey's. It's really good. They used to have like a really big second. If you walk in there at 7 o'clock, the place is loaded with sounds awful. Every table's full, people, a couple of people waiting in line. You swear the place is doing a land office business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet if you talk to the guy, we now close at 11, not 1, or not 12:30. Nobody's here after 8 o'clock or 9. We don't get any kind of second crowd from football games or from the movies or anything like that. It's really pretty amazing.
Gotcha.
And so you don't, just because you may look at something and see, boy, it looks busy to me, you got to be careful. And just, you know, it's like me going through the thing with Bobby Bonilla this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like an absolute, you know, dumbest thing ever made, but actually had about a 10%, 9.8% break even at it on the deal. And a return. Well, you know, it's a little high. I would never have done that, probably. But it's not like it's beyond the realm of what, you know, could possibly
happen. If they had continued to get the returns that they were getting from their money manager, it would have worked out quite nicely.
Yeah, well, but the problem is with Bernie, you never really got him. You just thought you did.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, that's the...
Did you ever know...
I wonder if Madoff knew that that's what they wanted to do with the money and that they were going to be pulling money out. If he knew that ahead of time, because pulling money out is the worst case scenario for Ponzi schemes.
Well, they had 11 years between the time he put it in.
Oh, I know there's 11 years. I mean, I guess maybe he just thought he would have been caught by then. So he's thinking, who knows? Who knows what the mentality was? You know what I mean? If somebody came to me and I was doing something like that and they said, yeah, we want to use the returns to pay for something else and I'm running a pyramid scheme, I don't want that money.
Did you see this thing on the Trump accounts for child savings?
Mm-mm.
This is includes a new savings account for children with a one-time deposit of $1,000 from the federal government for those born in 2024 through 2028.
Mm-hmm.
So in Trump's term, he's gonna give everybody $1,000, right? Gotta love him. Starting in 2026. So-called Trump accounts, a type of tax advantage savings account, would be available to all children under the age of 8 years old who are U.S. citizens, largely in line. I really don't get, even though I know I have a lot of people on the show that are conservative, I really don't get where every single one of these people that aren't citizens are all of a sudden my enemy.
Well, it's not that they're our enemy. It's that we want... I'm going to stretch on this one, and I'll bet you're going to roll your eyes on this one. But years ago, I had to do they asked me to speak at a Christian school about, you know, what what biblically is said about money. And there, you know, I started doing some digging, et cetera. And one of the things that it said, one of the things that you can draw out is you got to take care of yourself first, and you can't take care of anybody else unless you're taking care of your own house first. And I feel like there should be a component of that as to how we run things. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, the second somebody that if we send them back to their home country, they're they and their whole families are going to be put into a, you know, a camp for 30 years or something like that.
By the way, the camp's in the Everglades, you know.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about our camp. I'm talking about if we send them back to, you know, terrible country, and, you know, they're on the wrong side of politics in terrible country, and there's a good chance that they'll get disappeared when they go back to them. Because there are people that are truly seeking some sort of political asylum, and then there are people that are, you know, that are trying to seek a better life, and then there are bad actors that are slipping in there with all of them. And, you know, I feel like the bad actor group seems to be you know, the ones that we should be focusing on the most. You know, the out in Los Angeles, the mayor of Los Angeles was saying that gangs should, the gangs should, you know, protect their turf against ICE. I think there are a lot of gangs, and I'm just going to probably get myself in a little bit of trouble, but if you're a predominantly African-American gang, which is probably almost all people that were born here, maybe second or third generation here, a lot of people that are on the blue-collar side of things kind of approve, and I don't care what race you are, but approve of not letting too many people into our country. I'm saying it nicely there. Well, and in fact, I saw a reporter that went out in Compton, and they got, you know, they got both sides from folks in Compton that were like, look, you know, I got friends that need help, and the government needs to take care of my friends that have been, you know, that are citizens of this country before we start taking care of people that are citizens from outside of our country. And you got to assume that some of the issues that you have in some of the bigger cities right now are the cities trying to take care of too many people, which is very nice. But when you try to do that, everybody suffers. So it's not that they're our enemy. It's just that they shouldn't be. I think a lot of the mentality is that you shouldn't show up here and have everything immediately handed to you when there are people that have lived here their whole lives that are struggling to get by.
That is absolutely the party line, and a lot of people believe it. I don't believe a word of it.
You don't believe that it's very frustrating if you know you grew up and did all the things that you consider the right things, and just because of a couple of mishaps got a college degree and you're 28 and
the idea
working at Starbucks or something like that and barely being able to make your student loan payment, and then you see people that get to live for free in the Roosevelt Hotel in New York and have everything provided for them.
On a matter of degree, I don't believe a word of it. Be honest with you, Russell. I mean, I went through, like, I'm not supposed to do this because all I do is piss everybody off. I went through the actual numbers of people who showed up in Chicago on buses. The number is 40,000, roughly.
Okay.
Which, you know, is a lot of people, okay? But it also, you could fit them in Wrigley Field on a Sunday game.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a metropolitan area of 6.5 million people. Right?
Okay.
So the idea that these people are here for 4 or 5 months and everything is given to them, which is a total load of crap, because one of the biggest spots was right by me. I go by there twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in this building that they must have put more bathrooms in there. I hope they did. I saw people hanging around outside all the time. I saw individual people like us showing up, opening up their trunk. Of course, nobody's got a trunk anymore, showing my age. The back end of their SUV would, you know, 15 things of water and Coke and stuff, and individual people are giving them a lot of stuff. I've seen the people from who are the guys that give out all the food here? The food depository and people like that doing a lot of the feeding. And over a period of a couple of months, I see all of a sudden a few people going for the bus in the morning like they had a job, and then a few more and a few more and a few more. All of a sudden the place is closed, and pretty much everybody's assimilated. Or in the few that are left, are in like a regular homeless spot, which we have way more than 40,000 homeless, regular old homeless. Mm-hmm. And to go to the Hispanic community, like, you know, people in the building here are Hispanic, my good friends, and one of the guys could not understand how his neighbors are voting for Trump, because all of a sudden the message is these people are having this fast track, they're getting all these advantages instead of you. Now, there's people in this community that he can point your finger at, the people who have been in this citizenship process for like a decade. And somehow or another, the process is pretty damn slow. And I don't know why there's people here that I don't think any one of us would agree shouldn't be a citizen, and somehow it's very, very slow. And yet, if you tell a lie often enough, if you tell these people the only reason why you're not a citizen today is because all these other people are being fast-tracked and ahead of you in line, it's a total lie. And yet, it caused people to turn their votes for the first time toward a Republican candidate. It's a total lie. None of those people, the reason why they were not a citizen and why the citizen, the Immigration Bureau, is so screwed up and so delayed, had nothing to do with these new people. None whatsoever, I don't think. I mean, maybe 1% out of 100. And the total cost of the city of Chicago that they say, $600 and some million, which equates to $16,000 a person. I'm going to say that out of that $16,000, 10 of it went to the people that were supposedly feeding him and weren't. You know, for all the stuff that people were supposedly doing for him, every community organizer known to man, every city contractor, that 2/3 of that money did not go to them. It went to people, buddies of the mayor, or buddies of the president, or buddies of somebody. The idea that these people were not on an individual basis. I'm agreeing with you 100% on an individual basis. Did the city need that? No. You know, should somebody, you know, if all of a sudden everybody swam over on the same day, should that have been allowed to happen? No. I'm with you, but if you look at it in terms of scale, all the things you put toward these people, by the way, I never saw anybody smoking dope there. I never saw anybody drinking there. I never saw a fight. Yeah. So the idea that, I mean, do you honestly believe that the percentage of bad people out of this group is 10 times more than the civilian population? I don't buy that in the first second.
No, it's not that much. But there are people that are here that don't need to be here.
There are people in a trading floor that don't need to be here.
Yeah. there are people that don't need to, there are people that are here that are not here for you know, non-nefarious purposes. And
I'd like to deport half the people that are here that do all this stuff.
Well, no, you don't deport them. You put them in jail.
Well, who's going to this?
My feeling is if you've got an immigrant that's come over here and is just basically a bad actor, I don't understand why it's so difficult to send them back. And if you're not going to send them back, then you got to keep them somewhere. I think the Everglades is kind of a funny idea. I don't think we ever actually do that.
Oh, I wouldn't. I wouldn't put it past him.
Oh, come on. He says a lot of blustering.
He was
What crazy thing has he said that he actually followed through on?
Well, but you know what though?
Yeah,
is that what you want in a leader that says bad stuff?
No, I don't. I wish he would freaking behave. I really do.
So do I.
Because there are a lot of things that I agree with him on.
By the way, you know
and,
what? Don't I mean, tell anybody
and
I said this,
agree,
Russell.
I mean policy wise.
Don't tell anybody I said this. So do I. So do I.
What? No, I know. There are lots of things, and I try to keep it at that level, which is very difficult. I also try to stay very, very neutral around all of this because my wife leans in one direction in a very strong way, and my oldest daughter who wants to be like in the middle as much as possible. I mean, I wanted to take her to a libertarian thing just so she could learn about them, and she didn't want to appear like she favored them, so she wouldn't go. But we have really good, very good neutral discussions about, you know, about the whys behind a lot of things.
By the way, SP Futures down too.
And she knows, having worked on that book on Trump and having listened to hours of tape or hours of recording of him, but also a lot of other people that were around him. She knows she knows the ins and outs of that guy a lot more than most people,
sure,
and she doesn't like him as a guy. But I do want to, one other thing that just drives me.
Hey, before you say that, can I at least say that the S&P futures down 2,
Futures
down 53. We're not really going to go to break because there's not much going on. Hey,
just you know, with respect to him, when he got in the first time, I was thrilled because I was very hopeful that we could get some business leaders in government, because I feel like that's something that we're lacking. You know, most of government, it's supposed to be a representative government. And that's what, you know, what you guys were talking about in the last 10 minutes is what has fallen apart. I guess it's kind of a humble brag. I did my part as far as being a representative government. I ran for a school board, which was an awful job, and did it for 4 years, even though I wanted to quit after 2. I stuck it out. And you wouldn't believe some of the... There are people in Hinsdale that still won't talk to me because of some slight that I did toward their child, or how, you know, how they weren't happy with the ultimate outcome of the negotiations that we had with the teachers. You know, I did the representative thing, didn't get paid for it. That's how our government's supposed to work. The core of the problem in Washington D.C. is career politicians. And I really was very excited. I felt like if Trump got in there, did a halfway decent job, that it would open the door for other business leaders to maybe, instead at pseudo-retirement, going to lecture at University of Chicago, maybe going to do something in government.
In the immortal words of George Stigler, Nobel laureate, government is run as a business. You just don't understand the business.
I know. And then Howard Schultz, I think that's his name, the guy that was CEO of Starbucks, when he started to try to run as a Democrat, he got so eviscerated at the events that he just said, you know what, screw this, I'm not doing it.
No, Mike, all right.
I mean, he basically just didn't want to put up, and I don't blame him.
You lead me down a path here. Who are the people that tell him he can't run in every which way but Sunday? Who are the people that essentially, I won't say framed, but went after Elliot Spitzer? Who are the people?
Went after anybody that tried to run against Obama for Senate.
Yeah.
In Illinois.
Yeah.
They got picked off one by one. They just pulled their divorce records down at City Hall and said, "Hey, this guy."
The one guy went to a sex club in Europe with his wife.
Yep.
What's the matter with that?
Names of any.
But aren't you supposed to, if you go to a sex club, aren't you supposed to bring your wife?
That's what he said. You know, it was just, they had a bad night. So, and it was in the record. So, nobody told Howard, I'm sure I'm getting the name wrong, but nobody told the Starbucks CEO he couldn't run.
I think that is his name.
He started doing town halls and stuff. And the extreme liberal end of the party was showing up and saying, all you're going to do is fracture our party and allow Trump to win again. And he got shouted down so much, he was like, I don't need this. And I was the same way after a couple of years of people emailing me nasty stuff. And I got to where I would respond in a pretty nasty way. To a point where one parent wanted to get a restraining order against me because I basically talked to them like they talked to us. But
you know how screwed up.
And I feel like the nastiness in the world. I'm just on my old man rant today. The nastiness in the world is it really is the ability to say something online and not get punched in the face for saying it.
Well,
I got called a pedophile once. Because somebody disagreed with my analysis of a chart.
That's a stretch.
And it was not just that. It was like a long stretch of very graphic things that I like to do as my because I'm like, they posted it all on the SIBO site on a weekend, and I had to call somebody and get them to take it down. They posted it as a comment on a blog.
Really?
But I don't think. If I were presenting that at an investment conference, that they would talk to me like that. And I feel like our ability to be very nasty toward each other and not have somebody show up at your doorstep and, you know, knock on the door and go, I need to talk to you about what you said to my kid about me today. You know, I really do feel like the lack of repercussions are
well, it's real hard to insult somebody face to face. You might get a dotted eye.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And because all of our interactions, I mean, I told you I'm at home without the girls. I have probably in person since they left Saturday. I think in person I've interacted with two people in 4 days. Just I'm working on finishing writing something, so I'm kind of sequestered.
You should be holding court in one of the coffee shops.
No, I don't want to do that. So,
you know, Russell,
I got to focus. But my point is, you know, it's really, it's just so easy to say nasty things in this day and age where there's really no blowback.
Well, the numbers that people flip around, I wanted to run this one by, and I only spent like an hour or two on it, but everybody's convinced that the number of illegal creatures here is 19 million that swim across the river, right? If you ask us about any Republican, it's 19 million because Trump said so. Now, he's never lied, right? Has he ever told the truth? But anyway, the number is 19 million. So I dig through, you know, what you can on the internet, and I'm not the world's best at it. And I come across something that I never, in all my conspiratorial, I never thought I'd come across. When Biden's term, I don't know what they did before that, but it's probably the same thing. They started to, when you count people coming across the river, you sit there and go, okay, how exactly can you count them? Well, they started, whatever his law was, and Biden stopped it in 2023. If somebody came across, you could, like, arrest them, whatever you were going to do. But what this law said is you just immediately said, okay, you swam over. It's probably not what happened, but go ahead, swim back. You know, no repercussions. Just get the hell out of here. Go back where you were and cross the other way. Mm-hmm. So I think the term was that it was an interdiction. Those were now being counted as people entering the country illegally. But those were the people that were caught. The people you never caught, you can't count, right? How do you count somebody?
I've always wondered where those numbers come from.
So if the same guy came across 10 days in a row, it's considered 10 interdictions. 10 people came across the border. But by the way, he's still back in Mexico, he or she. So the number we have are the people that came across. Now, some of them probably were given asylum. I don't know. Some of them weren't sent back. I don't know the whole part of that during the Biden administration or the previous Trump administration or before that. I don't know all the ins and outs of it. And I go, let me get this straight. The people you're counting are the people that was coming into the country are the people you caught, most of whom you sent back. And the people who actually snuck through and you didn't catch, we have no idea. Well, yeah. I'm sitting there going, could I write fiction like that and sell a book, Russell?
No. I just feel like it would be, you know, I've always wondered where in the world those numbers come from.
They come from wherever anybody wants, and if you believe the person, they...
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know, you know, they've got the interventions, but they don't necessarily have the... I don't think they really know how many people have worked their way into.
So it's on the 11th day, the guy does manage to avoid the guy who sends him back every day. He's here, but he's counted as 10 people. And the only day he's not counted is the day he actually made it.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there going, this can't be right. What manner of moron would design a system like this? Now I guess they must process people or something. At least they know their name. So they come through a second time, they know it's the same guy or something. But for a while, they said the easiest part to catch somebody just send them back. Now there's a certain logic to that too, right?
Yeah, I mean that's when I've, what I would like to do is when we catch somebody, instead of sending them right back across the border, I think we should send them back to their country of origin. And that way, if you've got somebody that and there are a lot of people from China that they catch coming across in Mexico, that way if you're from China You know, but I'm just thinking about the risk there. You know, even if you're from, you know, one of the Central American countries on the other side of Mexico, and you've walked all the way through Mexico, could you imagine repeating that process if, when you get caught in the U.S., you get sent back to where you came from, as opposed to just across the border?
Well, there are people.
That right there would be, you know, kind of expensive, but, you know, you get a bunch of Chinese nationals, and once you have a plane load, you send them back to Beijing to you know.
Well, you know, but if they have money, we let them in right away, right?
I had a friend who married somebody from outside the country, and he said that the biggest concern always seemed to be financial. And that if he promised to be financially responsible for someone that he brought over, they were pretty much okay with it.
Don't we have a program where if you come over with enough money to where 10 people can get a job, like if you're going to build a building or something, doesn't they get you like 6 or 7 citizenships?
I don't really know.
I think we have a program like that.
I mean, and then we've got a program where a couple hundred thousand people a year can get citizenship. I don't think this is what it's called, but it's called a genius something, or I don't know. I actually qualify. We've been looking at maybe moving to another country for a while, as in me teaching outside of the country for a couple of years, just because I sort of can. And there are a lot of countries, just because I have a PhD and I have like this unique talent, that I can get all kinds of special visas. And if I stay there for up to 5 years, I could actually get citizenship, and my kids could.
What are they paying in Yemen?
But that's the kind of people that you really want to immigrate to your country, is somebody that's going to be very additive, you know?
Do you think somebody who somehow made the walk from Central America, and I'm not talking about this on a wild scale, you think the person who made the walk all the way from there, or whatever they did, you think the person's going to be too lazy to go to work when they get here? I don't think
so. Gosh, no. Absolutely not. No. I threw my ridiculous idea out there about basically having some sort of process near our border where if you've got an employer that needs 6 or 7 people to, you know, run a startup factory or something, they'll be financially responsible for them. They'll bring them in to be workers, bring in their families, provide, you know, kind of like the old, you know, grapes of wrath type situation where they'd have but don't mistreat the people, where you give them kind of a little place to live, or like they did with the Hoover Dam, I guess would be a decent example as well. But make, you know, have a place and a job for them when they've got the job.
Did you ever
when
see
they've got a place for them?
Did you ever see?
But do the matching before they get here.
I'm Russell. This is scary to say, but I'm becoming more of my mother every day. When I say that,
that's what happens to us. Yes.
I mean, when I say that, she was a very insightful person, and she would always look at a bunch of different sides of the story. Boy, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, does it? I remember her telling me once that the first time I saw Gone with the Wind, all I saw was the parties and the people and the dresses. And that's when I was 18. When I was 35, all I saw were the wounded. Vegas, I took the trip out to Hoover Dam, and I went there a couple times. I went with Bill Moriarty, the guy who was on the show, the civil engineer. Very educational, because Bill, of course, pointed out stuff that I never even dreamed of seeing, right? I mean, the guy's a brilliant guy when it comes to that kind of stuff. And not only did we have a nice time, but, you know, I learned so damn much. And so I got this film on Hoover Dam. You know, it's a little black and white, and I think it's a VCR. And the first couple times I saw it, all I saw was the concrete and this and that and the other thing. Next time I saw it, all I saw were the people. If you've never been out there, it's hotter than the hinges of hell. It's in the middle of the friggin' desert. Not a good place. And all these people essentially heard there's a dam going up and there might be work. So all these piece of crap old cars, just like in the movie Grapes of Wrath, are lined up, and there's tents right next to the river. Now, the river's full of silt, so you got to boil everything. And all these people are living down there in these tents, and they see these ladies walking along with a baby, and they're nursing the baby, and I'm sitting there, how the bleep could somebody live there for months just on the off chance a job might show up? Where are they getting their food? Where are they getting... When I saw it, I'm going, that's all I saw the second time, the last time I saw the movie, was all these people. And then at the end of the day, they built a city, Boulder City. And the government, when Kevin says, or you said, or Kevin, the government or anything, right, that's a beautiful little city even now. And they built these houses where guys said you'd come home from work and there was an empty lot next door, and now there is a house there. You know,
wow.
And it's, I mean, the city went up for the people who worked on the dam. To this day, there's no gambling in Boulder City, even though it's in Nevada, because it was a government town and they didn't want any gambling there. And but you see the hardships these people have. I don't want any crazed immigration policy here. That's nuts. It just opens up the floodgate. But I also know, and I try and put my head into what it would be like to live in one of these other countries. How the hell do you live in Venezuela? I couldn't wait to get my family the hell out of there.
There's two different, ways to live in Venezuela. I had a Venezuelan student in one of my classes recently, and there's the 10% of the population that lives okay, and then everybody else, and everybody else just is barely getting by day to day.
I couldn't wait to find steal whatever, a boat or a car, to get my ass the hell out of there and my family.
And either give up and just subsist, or you try to make a move for it.
And if I got a little crap at the border and blah blah blah, and I had to fight my way in with my family and take some abuse and from people, I wouldn't want to do that. But at the end of the day, boy, I'm not so sure it's not the right choice. I mean, you've got to
wonder in a country like Venezuela if they control who gets to leave and who has to stay, and the people that they allow to work their way up toward us, and the people that they allow to leave, if those are just the people they don't want.
Well, I don't know.
Like they're bad guys. Like, all right, we'll let you out of prison, but we don't want you in the country.
Sort of like the British.
That way, you don't have to pay to house them in prison anymore, but they're just not allowed in your country anymore.
Well, I mean, Australia turned out all right, didn't they?
They did turn out quite well.
And didn't we get?
I go from being a 6 to being a 2 when I go to Australia.
Well, I mean,
they're all just good looking.
But the the people, I mean, the people who showed up here were the riff and the raff, right?
Yeah, riff raff turned out okay.
Yeah. Well, the only thing they want to do is make sure nobody else gets here.
Yeah,
that's
same country.
Yeah, I don't. I come and go on this. I think things have to be organized properly, because you know what? If somebody does get here, you want some way where they can be assimilated as fast as possible.
And this is another issue, and I know this is a Trump talking point, but when you have people that are trying to immigrate here. And then at the same time, they talk about how awful the United States is. What the hell is going on?
Well,
you know, I mean, really, what if and I had students that I had a handful of students that were from outside of the United States, and they just would talk about what an awful country we were. And I'm just thinking, well, what? And they're and at the same time, they're trying to find a job so they can stay. I'm going to say
on any given day, I am amazingly critical of what I see going on in this country, because I want it to be better. I look at this disaster we got going at government at all levels. I don't see that. My point of view is, if the United States goes down, the world goes down. We have changed the world now for 75 years. Are we going to abdicate on that? I don't think
no,
we can.
I don't think we're going to abdicate on that. I'm going to loop back to my citing the Bible, which is if we start, if like you just said, basically you just said what I said about an hour ago, which is, you know, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we're not going to be able to help out the rest of the world.
But our example always has been, we are capable of A, taking care of ourselves, and helping other people elevate themselves. And now we somehow or another we've I don't know who's in I don't I honestly don't know who's in charge, Russell, but some group of people, you know, is using, you know, Trump as their diversion, as they use Biden as their diversion. What do you suppose? I mean, I'm going to ask you, we'll get to more economic topics. Where is the topic of conversation fighting back and forth between Trump and Powell when Powell is pouring more money in the system than any monetarist would ever say is prudent? He's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do. And yet all they do is...
Powell is smart enough. I actually have got a reporter call on this one, and I don't think they liked what I said, but I said basically Powell's just keeping his head down and like everybody else on Wall Street, just not paying attention to a lot of the day-to-day stuff that Trump says. I don't think Powell's paying that much attention. Yeah. You can't. You wouldn't be able to do your job. And every time Powell gets hit with something goofy, he just says, look, we're focused on inflation, we're focusing on employment, that's what our job is, that's our dual mandate, and all the other stuff is noise.
Except that's a fat lie, too, because he's focusing on creating inflation right now, not stopping it.
Maybe what he's doing is going to cause inflation in the future. I think we need to be very, very cautious with respect to cutting rates, because I feel like it wouldn't take a whole lot for it to tip us into another bout with inflation. And when you see things slowing at the same time, that could just be, you know, extremely detrimental and put us into a rut that lasts 5 to 10 years.
Explain me this. A current PhD in economics, explain to me this, why the federal government, the buffoons in power, whoever they were over the last 25 years, how have they been able to sweep anybody's talk, knowledge, anything of the money supply out of all conversation at all levels of TV and government? When that is the key thing, whether they declare
too up and, difficult for average people to understand.
Why?
Well, just talk to somebody from one of the business networks, and that's what they will tell you.
When I
bring up, you know, like any, when I've talked to, you know, talking head type people, and I brought up what, and I feel like we bring up, you know, two step type deals where we've got, you know, this causes this, et cetera. You know, what, yeah, you know, anything that would require an explanation of what it is, because most people don't even understand what it is and money supply is something that you would have to spend 3 minutes educating people on until you, you know, explain to them why what's going on is a bad thing for them. That's why you don't hear about it, because it's too difficult for most people to understand.
See, I don't agree with that.
And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but that's what you hear from the press people.
What if we had a table of, I was going to say, the schmucks I go drinking with once in a while. Yeah. What if we, a table, and they're not schmucks, but I'm saying if I had a table of six or seven people and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of music in the bar or whatever, and I were to say, guys, hypothetically, what would happen if every one of us, everybody in the country, could walk into their local Federal Reserve Bank, if you're outside of St. Louis or Chicago, it'd be a long walk, we drove in, and you handed them a Washington, and they handed you a Jefferson. You handed them who's on the $5 bill, Lincoln? And they gave you a $10 bill.
Lincoln's on the penny.
I know he's on the penny. Jefferson's a $2 bill, right?
I think.
Anyway, if you walked in with $100, they gave you another $100. and all of a sudden everything everybody knew, if you had 100,000 in the bank, all of a sudden you had 200,000. If you if you doubled the amount of money out there, say we're like Italy or something,
Everything would pretty much everything would more than double in price.
Everything if you owed somebody $20, now you owe them 40, right? I mean, everything people would understand that that all of a sudden you're not rich because you've just doubled the amount of money, and the car that was worth $1,000 is now worth $2. Doesn't mean that you've made $1,000 on your car. I think everybody would understand that. Everybody, if they thought about it for a second. And if you say, okay, what if you didn't do that? And what if you just leaked in like 5, 6, 8% a year? And over a period of time, you kind of doubled it without everybody's paycheck doubling, without the stuff you're selling doubling, but other people's stuff maybe double or maybe triple. What do you think that would do? I think everybody would understand immediately where I'm coming from if I explained it that way.
I think that'd be a great way to explain it. You know, the whole... frog in the boiling water thing, man.
Yeah, I mean,
turn it up slowly but surely, and then all of a sudden, like, oh crap.
Yeah,
and honestly, I think right now we're kind of in an oh crap moment, and we've anecdotally seen some things that lead us to believe that. You know, I live out here in the western suburbs, and I live near one of those streets that has a whole ton of car dealerships, including a Tesla dealership. And I know it's unique to Tesla, but never seen a lot of inventory there, and then the higher end places all seem to be their overflow lots are full right now with cars.
The Ziegler place out by Odd, which is BMW and something else.
Yeah,
and the guy's The guy's website, he brags that he has 295 new cars on the lot.
Yeah,
and the
used
one.
That's worrisome.
Yeah, you drive by there with the used one. It looks like you're going by the O'Hare Airport parking garage or something.
But that's what they're overflow lots that some of the dealerships on Ogden use, and they are more than full. You got to play a little Jenga game to get some of the cars out.
Well, if you mentioned earlier that you think these labor numbers today were horrible, tomorrow Carl's convinced they're going to be there's going to be a lot of, even if the main number is decent, he says the details going to be crummy. We'll see. Now,
yeah, I could totally. Yeah, you want to look at how many people are actually participating in the labor force. I wouldn't be surprised if that number goes down. And if that number goes down, it could actually mean that whatever the current unemployment rate stays the same, even though people have net lost jobs. But then you got to dig in there and look at any of the inflationary related numbers. Well, and that's what I worry about.
Two questions. Mm-hmm. One is, if you contrasted your sense that the economy is slowing down a little bit, and if you haven't looked at it, my report to you, this is in the last year, started when Biden was in there, in the last year the money supply growth has gone back up to 5.1% on average, but suddenly in the last 2 months increased to almost 6. If you combine a 6% growth in the money supply with an economy that's actually shrinking, what do you do the 2 and 2 on the inflation? Where does the inflation go?
Oh, it's going on. I mean, I do think that we're in a scenario where it's going to pick up, which it shouldn't be doing when people are losing jobs.
It's the cruelest tax of all.
It is. Well, it makes life difficult.
Well, it's funny, Kevin, you know, and I, of course, we argue about everything. He was saying that the last Trump tax bill, I mentioned it didn't really help that many people that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that I had somebody who had done a lot of returns for people, and people were bitching because they thought that they were going to get this big tax decrease in their taxes because of Trump's last bill, and it turns out they didn't. Now, Kevin, of course, was saying that the person who's doing that doesn't know what he was doing, which is absolutely not true, but I did happen to quiz the person that was doing all the returns. And he told me, part of the issue, that Kevin's probably not totally wrong. It's just that in the area he happened to be doing all the returns, Oak Lawn and that area, Southwest Side, an inordinate amount of the people, because the thing had just been your taxes are redone, reappraised or something. An inordinate amount of people on the returns that he was doing, their taxes, which had been $9,000 or $9,500, went to $10,500, $11,000, or $11,500 on their taxes. So what they picked up by the standard deduction increase, they lost on not being able to deduct the increase in the taxes. So their tax bill ended up being essentially the same. Even though they thought it was going to be a big discount, because Trump, of course, told people that, even if it's not true. Now, he would never do that. But so it actually comes out to maybe Kevin's not totally wrong, which I never thought he was. But depending on where you are on the bubble, it may have helped you, or maybe it didn't, if you put the two things together. So if you're in an area where all of a sudden maybe people were paying $12,000 for their taxes, and all of a sudden can't take the extra two off, it gets you right back to the $1,000 deductible sort of thing anyway. So anyway, I don't think Kevin's wrong on this at all, but I also know that a lot of people didn't get the savings they were advertised to get. Now, a lot of other people probably aren't paying any taxes. For property taxes, like Kevin says, probably actually did get $1,000 better on the return than they did the year before. So I'm sure that did happen. But it's all kind of taken together. And when you put inflation in there, I mean, how many people that we probably know that don't even know their finances have gone in the last few years, if they're lucky, they went from, you know, $43,000 a year to $55,000 a year. And now all of a sudden, once you go over 40, doesn't the tax rate go from 12 to 22? And or is it over 50, your tax rate goes up, and if you're paying for your own insurance, all of a sudden now you drop out of the government help. I think if you went from 45 to 58 in the last 4 years, you're down on the day. Unless your firm is paying
if they're doing your health insurance for you, or you know.
So I mean, I think that's when you do all these different things, you know, in the tax law, you never really know where the one person is, and you sort of got to be careful and like all of this stuff, I'm sort of sensitive to this, because I used to do tax returns for people when I was very, very young, back when I knew something about taxes, and it wasn't near as complicated. Remember when they used to send you the whole big thing with all the tables and all the different stuff?
Oh, the book, yes.
The whole book. And I remember the guys from, in the original inflation day, if you would have went from $16,000 in 1973 to $22,000 in 1980... I don't think you got anywhere, even though you allegedly went up over 20%.
No.
All of a sudden, your tax rate was going up, your inflation was going up. I think if you went to 25, you were still even on the day in terms of buying power, what you actually brought home. Not to mention the state somewhere in there put a state income tax. I don't know when that came in, but it was. At some point, the biggest winner on inflation is the government, right? You bump people in
it
tax
is,
brackets.
And it's how they're going to get out of, eventually at some point, if we get out of some of the debt problems we have, it's going to be through a bout of inflation, which is going to be painful for everyone. And the government's going to be able to say that they're on our side by helping us try to combat this inflation. And they're not going to say that it was their fault that it happened in the first place. But they'll benefit from it as well.
Except if we do it too bad, you bury people so much that your economy goes down so much that you don't get the return that you think you're going to get. And if you really do it so bad, we think we can't be the Weimar Republic because we are the world's currency. Yet, be careful with that one too.
Yeah, and I mean, because we pay for everything digitally, we wouldn't have to carry a wheelbarrow full of dollars.
If we had
hyperinflation, back then they were they're paying for a loaf of bread with a handful of Deutschmarks or whatever, and printing so fast they couldn't keep up with it. We could just do something digitally to handle it.
Well, people they used to want to get off at lunch to go shopping because the prices would be up by dinner.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you got to go. But here, you got to buy things as quickly as possible.
We got a dasher.
Get your economy moving.
We got a dasher. But you know what? The Weimar Republic declared that policy a success.
Of course they did.
You know
why? It got them out of the war debt, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, they ended up. they got them out of the stuff was so worthless that finally Britain and France said, okay, you don't have to pay as much. But at that time, they had told her, you know, absolutely loved it. When you ask now about how who benefits from this, sometimes you got to go back and look at other people. Anybody who had a, and there's a lot of farms in Germany. Anybody who had a farm and had a mortgage on the farm paid off the mortgage in like 6 months.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, paid off the mortgage.
See, much like our government can pay off its giant mortgage if we have hyperinflation.
Well, much like the people who own baseball teams and football teams that don't borrow at 24% like the rest of us, how much they can pay off that team.
Yeah. Oh, I got to check the tax bill and see if it, I know we're way over, but there was this discussion that Trump was going to come after sports teams owners and the way they use their losses to offset other things, which I think is total revenge for never getting an NFL team. But got to see
someday,
if that's buried in there somewhere.
Do you have an accident expert? Do you have a tax expert at Indiana? Somewhere buried in the tax code, and I can't find it, and nobody wants to talk about it. Every business you're in, I know this, certainly in our business, that if you and I started a trading firm and we put $1 million a piece in and we lost $5 million, which, God, we never want to do, we can only take a deduction of $1 million because that's all we had on the table, right? You're at risk provision, as I think they call it in the tax law. Somehow, some way, and Trump has availed himself of this, I think, not positive, and I think other people in real estate too. Somehow or another in real estate, you can take the whole 2.5, even though you never had the whole 2.5 up there. Because, I mean, a couple of times, and I'm not saying he's alone on this, and I'm not saying, you know, that he wanted to lose money. I don't think he did. I think he kind of got screwed by the casino in Connecticut, but I'm willing to give him that break. But I think in real estate, when they say, you know, he had lost $100 million on his property, I don't think Trump ever had $100 million in the property.
Oh, gosh, no. Other people's money.
But I'm saying somehow or another in real estate, the owners get to take a loss, I think. And maybe if you bring somebody on and say, I don't know where you heard that, Chief, you're an idiot. I'm willing to take that. But I think that somehow or another there's a carve-out in the real estate stuff that allows you to take more than you put in. I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Also, I think when you get a cabinet-level position, I think you can sell your stock in the company. Well, back in those days when people used to sell it, now they don't sell it, they trade it. You used to be able to sell a stock in that company and not pay taxes.
Yeah, that's why somebody that, you know, from Goldman Sachs that has $500 million in stock and was making 30 or 40 million a year is more than willing to go be Treasury Secretary for a couple of years.
What was the guy's name?
Paulson was one of them. But I think there are a lot of guys that have pulled that one off.
I think, what's his name? Duke's buddy from, who was the SEC chair?
Chapman.
Yeah, who was SEC chair for a while.
That's a little before my time.
I was supposed to ride in a limousine with the guy. He didn't show up. That would have been interesting.
That would have been an interesting call. Maybe he heard of you.
If I am going to go to that thing, I will give you a buzz.
Yeah, please do. I'll send you home with a French bulldog.
Oh, okay. We'll how's the pooches?
They're doing great, but yeah, show up and I'll send you home with the dog.
Hey, I heard wind. You might want to run this by the girls. I heard wind. There might be three dogs that somebody had who maybe died that might be available.
Oh, goodness. Let me go talk to my wife about that.
You might want to mention that they're Irish wolfhounds.
Ooh. I will bring that up.
Probably like 160 apiece.
Oh, nice. All right.
You're sitting down. The guy's looking you eyeball to eyeball, looking you right in the eye.
I think we're going to pass on that one for sure.
All right. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.